Good morning, everyone. We're reading in Book 2, Canto 10, The Kingdom and Godheads of the Little Mind. And we had read about how the power which has brought mind down into the earth evolution started with a three-bodied instrument. And we read about the first two of those three. The first one was this physical mind hammering fact and form. And the second one was the vital mind, the hunchback rider of the red wild ass. And that seems to be a very uncontrollable power. But on page 249, line 395, Sri Aurobindo tells us even this rash intelligence has its place and its usefulness. He says, yet were its works nor small and vain nor null, it nursed a portion of infinity's strength and could create the high things its fancy willed. Its passion caught what calm intelligence missed. Insight of impulse laid its leaping grasp on heaven's high thought had hidden in dazzling mist. Caught glimmers that revealed a lurking sun. It probed the void and found a treasure there, a half-intuition purpled in its sense. It threw the lightning's fork and hit the unseen. It saw in the dark and vaguely blinked in the light. Ignorance was its field, the unknown its prize. It's a kind of paradoxical power, with negative and positive aspects. So we're on page 249, and about halfway down the page, there's a little indentation, a beginning of a new paragraph. That's where we'll start reading today. So those are the first two, the physical mind and the vital mind. And now there's quite a long section about reason, the third of the powers. And we haven't read this these next few pages. So that's the first thing that we'll do. We'll read to the end of the canto. That's the next 10 pages. And then we'll come back to this point on the middle of page 249 and look at the lines, the sentences, in more detail. You'll begin, Ramana.
Of all these powers, the greatest was the last. Arriving late from a far plane of thought into a fact, the rational world of chance, where all was glossy, fair, and blindly done, yet the haphazard seemed the inevitable, came reason, the squat Godhead had partitioned to her narrow house upon a ridge in time. Adept of clear contrivance and design, a pensive face and close and peering eyes, she took her firm and irremovable seat, the strongest, wisest of the troll-like three, armed with her lens and measuring rod and probe. She looked upon an object universe and the multitudes that in it live and die, and the body of space and the fleeing soul of time, and took the earth and stars into her hands to try what she could make of this strange thing.
Thank you. Again.
In her strong, purposeful, laborious mind, intending her scheme lines for reality and the geometric curves of her time plan, she multiplied her slow, hard-cut at truth, impatient of enigma and the unknown, intolerant of the lawless and the unique, imposing reflection on the march of force, imposing clarity on the unfathomable. She strove to reduce the rules of the mystic world, nothing she knew but all things hoped to know, in dark, inconscient realms, once void of thought, missioned by a supreme intelligence. to throw its rays on the obscure rocks, an imperfect light leading and bearing us by the power of sense and the idea and word. She ferrets out nature's process, substance, cause, all life to harmonize by thought's control. She with the huge imbroglio struggles still, ignorant of all but her own seeking mind. To save the world from ignorance, she can.
Thank you. Patricia.
A sovereign worker through the century, observing and remolding all that is. Confident, she took up her stupendous. There the low bent and mighty figure sits, bowed under the arc lamps of her factory home, amid the clatter and ringing of her tomb. A rigorous stare in her creative eyes, coercing the plastic stuff of cosmic mind. She sets the hard inventions of her brain in a pattern of eternal indifference to the cosmic dumb demand, unconscious of too close reality, of the unspoken thought, the voiceless heart. She leans to forge her credos and iron codes and metal structure, to imprison life and mechanic models of all things that are. For the world seen, she leaves a world conceived. She spins in stiff but unsubstantial line her gossamer webs of abstract thought, her segments of her theodicies and cosmogonic and myths by which she explains the inexplicable. At will, she spaces in thin air of mind, like maps in the schoolhouse of intellect, forcing wide truth into a narrow. Her numberless, warring, strict philosophy, out of nature's body of phenomena, carves with thought, keen edge, and rigid lines, like rails for the world magician's power to run. Her science is precise.
Thank you. Don?
On the huge, bare walls of human nescience, written round nature's deep, dumb hieroglyphs, she pens in clear, demotic characters the vast encyclopedia of her thoughts, an algebra of her mathematics science, her numbers and unerring formulas. She builds to clinch her summary of things, on all sides runs as if in a cosmic mosque, tracing the scriptural reverses of her laws, the diagonal of her pattern arabesque, art of her wisdom, artifice of her law. This art, this artifice, are her only stock. In her high works of pure intelligence, in her withdrawal from the senses trap, there comes no breaking of the walls of mind. There leaps no rending flash of absolute power. There dawns no light of heavenly certitude. A million faces wears her knowledge here, and every face is turbid with a doubt. All now is question, all reduced to naught. Once monumental in their massive craft, her old great mythic writings disappear, and into their place start strict ephemeral signs. This constant change felt progress to her eye. Her thought is an endless march without a goal. There is no summit on which she can stand and see in a single glance the infinite's whole.
Thank you. Marie-Ange.
An inconclusive play is wisdom's story. Each wrong idea can use her as a tool, accepting every grief she pleads her case. Open to every thought she cannot know. Eternal advocate seated as the immersed in logics and vulnerable men, a thousand combatant for those veiled form and set on a high horseback of argument to tilt forever with a wordy lance in a mock tournament where none can win. Same thoughts, values with a rigid set, balanced she sits on wide and empty air, and good and pure in an impartial voice. Absolute, a judgment seems, but none is sure. Time pencils all of the things in appeal, although like sunbeam, to a glow It was a glittering robe on ignorance, but now is lost the ancient sovereign claim to rule mind, high mind, high hell in an absolute right. Blind thought with logic's force forged in parallel chain, or see-through noon in a bright abstract haze. Master and slave of star phenomena travels on the roads of erring sight, or looks upon a set mechanical world constructed for her by an instrument, a bullock yoke in the cart of woven fat. She drags huge knowledge bales through matter's dust to which utilities immense bazaar.
Thank you. Good morning, Fanny. We are on the page 252 at the bottom. Right at the bottom, line 531. Would you read there, Fanny? Okay. Would you like to read? Line 531 at the bottom of page 252.
Pointless, she has grown to her old grudge. In aided sense, her seeker's powder. This now she uses as the assailer's stone. As if she knew, not facts are husks of truth. The husks, the kernel throws aside. An ancient wisdom fades into the past. The ages fade, becoming idle tale.
Idle, an idle tale.
God passes out of the awakened thought. An old, discarded dream needed no more. Only she seeks mechanic nature's peace, interpreting stone laws inevitable. She digs into matter's heart, concealing soil, to unearth the processes of all things done. A loaded, huge, self-worked machine appears, to her eyes eager and admiring stare, an intricate and meaningless engineering, of ordered, faithful, and unfailing chance, ingenious and meticulous and minute.
Yeah.
Its brute, unconscious, accurate device unrolls an unerring march, maps of sure road. It plans without thinking, acts without a will. A million purposes serves with purpose none, and builds a rational world without a mind.
Thank you. You'd like to read today, Pastor?
It has no ruler, no maker, no idea. Its vast self-action toils without a cause. A lifeless energy, irresistibly driven, death's head on the body of necessity.
Engenders
life and fathers consciousness. Then wonders why all was and whence it came. Our thoughts are parts of the immense machine. Our ponderings, but a freak of matter's law. The mystic's lore was a fancy or a blind. Our soul, our spirit, we have now no need. Matter is the admirable reality, the pattern, unescapable miracle, the hard truth of things, simple, eternal soul. A suicidal rash expenditure, creating the world by a mystery of self-loss. As poured its scattered works on empty space, late shall the self-disintegrating force contract the immense expansion it has made. Then ends this mighty and unmeaning toil. The void is left bare, vacant as before. Thus vindicated, crowned the grand new thought, explained the world and mastered all its law. Touched the dumb rules, woke wave tremendous powers, it bound to service the unconscious
jinns
that sleep unused in matter's ignorant trance. All was precise, rigid, and
indubitable. Stop there, please. But when on matter's rock of ages base a whole stood up firm and clear-cut and safe, all staggered back into a sea of doubt. This solid scheme melted in endless flux. She had met formless power, inventor of form. Suddenly she stumbled upon things unseen. A lightning from the undiscovered truth startled her eyes with its perplexing glare and dug a gulf between the real and known, till all her knowledge seemed an ignorance. Once more the world was made a wonder web, a magic's process in a magical space, an unintelligible miracle's depths whose source is lost in the inevitable. Once more we face the blank unknowable. Turiya.
In a bayous, in a huge, in the sputter and scatter of her breaking world, she lost her clear, conserved, constructed will. The quantum dance remained a score of chance in energy's stupendous tripping world, a ceaseless motion in the unbounded void, invented forms without a thought or aim. The city and court were shapeless hosts. Matter was an incident in being's form, law but a clockwork habit of blind force. Ideals, ethic systems had no base, and soon collapsed, or without sanction, the old rule of chaos, seeds and clashing strife. Ideas, warring and fears leaped upon life. A hard compression held down anarchy, and liberty was only a phantom's name. Creation and destruction watched in armed on the bosom of a torn and quaking earth. All created into a world of godless dance.
Thank you. Catherine.
Thus tumbling, sinking, sprawling in the void, clutching for props, a soil on which to stand. She only saw a thin atomic vast, the rare point, sparse substratum universe on which floats a solid world's phenomenal face. Alone, a process of events was there, and nature's plastic and protean change, and strong by death to slay or to create, the riven, invisible atoms of omnipotent force. One chance remained that here might be a power to liberate man from the old inadequate means and leave him sovereign of the earthly sea. For reason then might grasp the original force to drive her car upon the roads of time. All then might serve the need of the thinking race, an absolute state found orders absolute, to a standardized perfection cut all things, in society build a just, exact machine. Then science and reason, careless of the soul, could iron out a tranquil, uniform world, aeonic seekings glut with outward truths, and a single pattern of thinking forced on mind, inflicting matter's logic on spirit's dreams, a reasonable animal made of man, and a symmetrical fabric of his life.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
This would be nature's speak on an obscure globe, the grand result of the long ages story, Earth's evolution crowned and mission done. So might it be if the spirit fell asleep, man then might rest content and live in peace. Master of nature who once held one slave's work, the world's disorder hardening into law. If life's dire heart arose not in revolt, if God within would find no greater plan, that many visaged is the cosmic soul. Touch can alter the fixed front of fate. A sudden turn can come, a road appear. A greater mind may see a greater truth, or we might find, when all the rest has failed, hid in ourselves the key of perfect change. Ascending from the soil where creep our days, Earth's consciousness may marry with the sun. Our mortal life ride on the spirit's wings, our finite soul commune with the infinite.
Thank you. Francis.
In the breath, in the rising of sun, all is in the universe, all is immersed in the power of life. expressing his death, the moment is back. Awake to dream of foods become a heart, to make it feel sad and super well, and bend the marble in them as a pulse. But need the forward being the face of life. She did the task, obeying no one given a deep heart yearning towards real dancing, and from the light look out to wider light. Breathing faith round and round the narrow void. Faithful to a limited sphere, but beneath tireless, wider theme was a heart set. Might heart pass out by state. For not by reason was creation made, and not by reason can the truth be seen. But so the baby so is queen of sense, hardly spirit vision in this cry. Deep by the imperfection of its means, as the little mind is tied to little sense. Its sense is but the spirit's outright touch, halfway in the world of dark and conscience, to feel out what brings of its fall, like one night trembling in the deep ignorant night.
Thank you, Rita.
In this small mold of infant mind and sense, desire is a child heart's cry, crying for bliss. Our reason only a toy's artificer, a rule maker in a strange stumbling game. But she, her dwarf, aids new, whose confident sight a bounded prospect took for the far goal. The world she has made is an interim report of a traveler towards the half-found truth in things moving twixt nations and nations. For nothing is known while aught remains concealed. The truth is known only when all is seen. Attracted by the all that is the one, she yearns towards a higher light than hers. Hid by her cults and creeds, she has glimpsed God's face. She knows she has but found a form, a road. But ever she hopes to see him in her heart and feel the body of his reality.
Thank you. Jean-Yves?
As yet, a mask is there, and not a room. Although sometimes with hidden eyes of people, reason cannot tear off that glimmering mask. The Air Force only made it glimmer. In packets she ties up in the city. Finding her hands too small to hold fast, she breaks up knowledge into alien parts. Or peers to call back for a vanished sun. She sees, not understanding what she has seen, through the locked visages of finite things, the myriad aspects of the field. One day the face must bear out the mask of ignorance, expertise, cruelty. However, there's new knowledge and sway, darkness is a black and not a black. Thought dancing hand in hand with nature on the grey wall that wings like the sun. Even while her fingers fumble at the knots which bind them with a strange companionship into the moments of a narrow strife, sometimes great flashes of the enlightening fire. Even now great thoughts are here that walk alone, armed they have come to the infallible world in an investment of the intuitive life that is a sanction on the eye of God. And answers of a distant truth, they flame, arriving from the rim of eternity. And fire shall come out of the infinity. A great gnosis shall the door of the world, crossing out from some far combination, on earth to sea, on the steel world alone, in living the deep heart of self and things, a timeless knowledge shall bring to mind its aim to life, the ignorance is cold.
Thank you. So these are the three powers, but there's still something beyond. Would you read, please, Mehong?
Above, in a high, breathless stratosphere, on the great trinity, we, as birds, voluminous beyond, captives, captives of space, whirled by the limiting heaven and the unceasing circuit of the hours, yearning for the straight paths of eternity. And from their high station, look down on this world, cruel sun gaze, demons, in all that is power to uplift the levered world, imperious road, a huge high wing like thought, and want to tread the palm unchanged story, accustomed from blue eternity. It planned in sunny sky, and silent air is so afar the unreached emotional form, and heard afar the voices of the gods, iconoclast and shatterer of time's courts, overleaping limit and exceeding known, elite the thoughts that glow through the centuries and move into acts of superhuman force. Fires itself being airplane could fly, visiting the future in great brilliant rays. It reconnoitred vistas of dream fate, apt to conceive, unable to attain. It drew its concept mass and vision pen too large for the architecture of mortal space, beyond in wildness where no footing is, and images of bodiless ideas, impassive to the cry of life and sense, a pure thought mind surveyed the cosmic archangel of a white transcending. Is so the world from solitary heights, luminous, remote, and empty air.
Thank you. So we can go back to the middle of page 249 and look in more detail at this last 10 pages. Margaret?
Of all these powers, the greatest was the last, arriving late from a far plane of thought into a packed, irrational world where all was crossly felt and blindly done. Yet the other seemed inevitable. Came least the squat godhead to a narrow house upon the ridge in mind, a depth of appearance and design, a pensive face and closed and peering eyes, she took her firm and irremovable seat, the strongest, wisest of the trolled light tree. Armed with her lens and measuring rod and the throat, she looked upon an object universe and the multitudes that in it lived and died, and the body of space and the fleeing soul of time, and took the earth and stars into her hands to try what she could make of these strange things.
Thank you. Haphazard. Everything's in a chaotic jumble by chance. Just the way things fall by chance. You have your bag and you shake everything out, and there's a haphazard heap of things. So our world is like that. That's the world that reason came into, where the haphazard seemed the inevitable, that all that confusion seems as if that's the way it has to be.
Contrivance.
It's when you cleverly invent ways to get things done, either mechanically or in other ways. How you contrive to get certain things. So she's very good at that clear contrivance design. She's got her tools, her lens for a magnifying glass, her measuring rod, her probe. We can stick into the earth and find out what is inside. She sees the world as a collection of objects, as something to be seen objectively. And she sees all these multitudes, all the many living creatures, and she sees this vast body of space, the fleeing soul of time. That's the biggest mystery. How can reason deal with the fleeing soul of time?
How can she see the soul?
Well, she sees that there is something. I mean, our reason shows us that there's something like time, but we can't define it or explain how it works. No? Physicists have proofs that there is something that we call time. How to explain it? But she takes all this whole universe, into her hands to try what she could make, how to understand all these strange things. Yes, so at the beginning it mentioned that she had taken this three-bodied trinity, no? And the first one was that little physical mind, and then the hunchback rider. And then even this reason, he says she's squat, she's small, and not very attractive looking. No? So these are troll-like. Of course, trolls are beings in Nordic mythology who are supposed to have, are believed to have emerged from the earth. They've come out, they're these rather brutish beings, and in the darkness they can move around and do things, but the first ray of light, of dawn light, freezes them back into stone.
Interesting,
so this is the image that he has chosen for these aspects of the little mind.
How then the parents often know that can't carry this theory, this knowledge?
Yes. Well, there's a power behind them. There's a power, a mind power, who has missioned these three fellows, these three beings, or these three instrument powers of hers. And later on, towards the end of the canto, he says that power knows that these are only crude instruments, but still they have a use, because she can see the further purpose. Mm-hmm. Jocelyn. Thank you.
Conjures the image of an accountant of all things, to find the proper column and the label.
But also a geometer, this half cuts, you know, they have these shapes, these platonic shapes, and they like to cut sections into them to discover their properties. So reason is impatient of enigma and the unknown. Really reasonable people are very impatient. About irrational anality. No, they don't like it at all. And what can't be grasped, the unknown. Intolerant of the lawless, what lies beyond the law, doesn't obey the law. And the unique, what is outstanding outside the law, which doesn't fit in. That's very annoying.
It just doesn't make sense.
Yes, it doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Could you please explain this inventing of scheme lines of reality? What is scheme lines?
Well, this is what she invents. These are her ways to try and understand things. So she makes up a theory, a scheme, and sees how that fits the reality, or tries to see reality in terms of that scheme.
So all our policies, rules, regulations are from there?
Are attempts like that, yeah.
I feel like right now all of this under the influence of this third one.
So we have to read again a wonderful passage. I think I've published it once in the Saya journal, Ritam. Sri Aurobindo speaks about three stages of the evolution of human society. And the first stage, everything is done just instinctively. Done instinctively. There's a group, and instinctively they organize themselves to a certain extent, and then they invent certain taboos and things like that, But it's all instinctive, it's not actually rational. But as the societies become more numerous and more complex, some organization becomes essential. And then we try to organize ourselves.
Do's and don'ts, like in Oroville in the beginning, years and now.
Yes, now we are in this stage of trying to organize things, make things more rational. And not only more rational, but also more ideal. He says this is a very important stage in our growth, is when we formulate our ideas and ideals. And this has been very, very fruitful in the history of humanity. But it carries a great danger, the danger that these ideas and ideals become rigid rules and regulations and very restrictive. And he said that's the danger which has to be avoided. He says it can only be avoided by passing on to a third stage where it's not any more reason, but it's a higher, much more flexible, richer kind of vision which organizes things and which allows each power, each individual to fulfill their own potential. But he says nowhere, in no country, at no time in history has that yet happened. And that is the challenge that we are here to deal with. No?
Is that our stage? That's divine anarchy?
Divine anarchy perhaps would be even beyond that stage, when no rules and no organization is necessary because everything is spontaneously in the right place.
So will there be a struggle from stage 2 to stage 3, or it will be a smooth transition?
I suppose that depends on the amount of cooperation and collaboration that the participants, the amount of vision that they can bring to it. I think so, yes. There's things develop, and then, yes, we have to be a bit, can't help beginning to be a bit more aware of that and reflect and maybe try to control. Yeah. And who is this seeing power? Who's organizing all this? It's, of course, the Supreme Divine Mother, the conscious force of the divine. She's making use of all these imperfect instruments, the different powers, and all of us, and all of everybody, everything, to work out this far-seen end, the divine life on earth, at least.
In this year to the birthday cards, it makes the divine consciousness the leading power of your life.
This is the solution that's pointed out to us. Well, that we can do this, and in this way we can contribute most effectively to this process, each of us in our own ways, each one differently. In our recent invocation, this mother's message at the beginning, she says, who can understand Sri Aurobindo? His vision is so vast. The best thing we can do is to love him sincerely and try to serve him. And in that way, each one will contribute the best that they can. I'm misquoting. I'm no good at remembering these messages, but that's at the opening page of our invocation number 49. But reason has been a very, very powerful tool for the development of consciousness. So let's go on a little bit more. How does she work? Marco?
No. Worlds once spoiled for mission by a supreme intelligence, to draw its ray upon the obscure dust, an imperfect light leading the daring must by the power of sense and the idea and word. She felt out nature's process, substance, laws, all life to harmonize by thought's control. She lived her huge imperative. Rather still, ignorant of all, but her own seeing mind, to save the world from ignorance. A sovereign worker through the centuries, observing and unfolding all that he is confident, she took up her stupendous charge.
Thank you. Yes, and these are the tools, no? She leads by the power of sense and the idea and word. Those are her tools. A ferret is a small animal which you can use for hunting, no? You send them down the burrow to get the rabbit or whatever it is. Or a ferret, it finds its way somehow, pulls out prey. So what she's ferreting out is the understanding of nature's process. Nature's process, nature's substance, and even cause. And she's trying to make sense of all this. It's an imbroglio, an incredible complex muddle. She's struggling to sort it all out. And all the only thing she's sure of is her own seeking mind. But she's been sent, this power has been sent to save the world from ignorance. There are higher lights than reason, but for most of us, most of the time, it's the most reliable light we have. So then he paints such a nice picture about her. Helmut.
There the low end and mighty figure sits bowed under the arch-lines of the factory door, amid the clatter and blinking of the wheels. She stares with her creative eyes, coercing the plastic stuff of the cosmic mind. She sets the heart tensions of her brain in a pattern of
thank you.
Vision in French is feminine.
Yes, also here.
Yeah, but in English it is.
Here he says she.
Yeah, so.
But yes, we. Here he's using the feminine. Well, because he's picturing this figure. It's a female figure.
And the first two
were male.
It's usually the opposite. People usually conceive women as irrational and men as rational.
I don't accept these categorization. We are all partly irrational and partly rational. I mean, all even slightly developed human beings have the power of reason. Even small children can play mastermind. But he says she's got these arc lamps, these very bright lights. Her home is a factory. She manufactures things with her tools, clatter and ringing of her tools. And what is she doing? She's using her eyes, her power of vision is creative. And she has a very rigorous stare. There's no mist and confusion and delusion there. It's a very clear kind of vision, although limited. She coerces, she's able to shape, forcibly shape, the plastic stuff of cosmic mind. Universal mind can be shaped and formed. And she creates these forms, these rules, these theories and formulas, and she sets these hard inventions of her brain in a pattern of eternal fixity. That's how it is. We will read a bit more about this in the next canto, about the greater mind, how this mind power works. She thinks that this need, this longing, the cosmic dumb demand for delight is irrelevant. She's indifferent to that. And there are certain things which she just ignores. She's unconscious of these two close realities, the unspoken thought, the voiceless heart. So she's stooping down to forge, to make firmly out of metal her credos and her iron codes. This is how it is. These metal structures to imprison life, these mechanic models of all things that are.
What can this mean? Unconscious of two close realities.
Well, I think that the two close realities are what he says in the next line. The unspoken thought. These are very, very close and real to us as human individuals, no? But they're not part of the of what reason deals with. She tends to ignore these things. the unspoken thought, the voiceless heart, that longing which is there. She leaves those aside. They don't count.
Line 454. What is this dumb from the cosmic?
From the universe.
What is that?
Well, I'm just guessing, but I feel that the cosmic dumb demand is perfect bliss.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Before I said intuition.
No, what it can be is a kind of foreseeing of the divine life, the divine universe.
But nature struggle to reach the divine, ultimate Prakriti reaching for the
But what is that? Now, what is it that the universe wants? Of course, it's a kind of fulfillment.
Dumb,
it can't express itself. Yes, Sri Aurobindo never uses the word dumb in the sense of stupid. He says mute, dumb, that it has no way to express itself. Sorry? No, that's an American slang. It has nothing to do with English literature. Sorry. Yes, yes. That longing which is in the whole universe for that fulfillment. So one way of expressing it is perfect existence, perfect consciousness, perfect bliss.
And the arc lamps are
They are very powerful lights that we have in factories. No, they don't cast any shadows, or they shouldn't, huh? Am I right about arc lamp? Powerful light. So what is she doing? She's weaving a world conceived. It's the product of mind, of reason. She sees the world, and out of that material provided by the senses and the word, the idea, she creates another world that doesn't correspond exactly to the real world. It's a world conceived. It's a world that makes sense to the reason, but which is full of amazing surprises and miracles if we look at it in another way. How are we doing for time? Sonia, would you read? You can start at line 460. Theodicies. Cosmogonicture. Let's pause there. Gossamer. It's one of my favorite words, but we talked about it before. It's the silk that baby spiders spin. Very, very fine threads of silk. And when the baby spiders hatch from their eggs, they spin a long line of silk like that and wait for the wind to carry them off to their home. So there can be a certain days in the year, certain weather, when the spiderlings hatch. We can have this beautiful view of a field covered with these silver threads. And it is supposed to be one of the strongest substances on Earth. That it's stronger than reinforced steel. It means compared to its diameter. Yes.
What is this theodicies and cosmogonic charts?
Yes. Theodicies are systems of, what you think the divine thinks, the way the divine has ordained things. And cosmogonic is the study of the cosmos and the way, of course, from ancient times till now, our charts of the cosmos, they've changed very, very much in appearance. but there's been a whole succession of them, as of our theodicies, as of our way of interpreting the divine providence and will. But those things are somehow justified by human reason. She forms them, her segment systems of the infinite. What out of infinite possibility she cuts out and says, yes, this is how it is. But he also uses this word myth. Here. Earlier in this canto, he explained to us how in the early stages of human mentality were rich food for our development. These stories, these ways we have of explaining the universe to ourselves. And it's interesting to think that even our present cosmogonic theories, the theory of the Big Bang and the theories of quantum mechanics and all that, they are just myths, actually. They are symbolic ways that we use to give ourselves some way of understanding the world that we live in.
Myths into account.
She creates myths. She says, this is the way. By myths, she explains the inexplicable. Our universe can't really be explained, but since the earliest times, human beings have created myths. And if we are generous enough and look at those early myths and our own myths, we can see that they're just saying the same things in a different language. Sorry?
Theory of evolution is also like that.
Right? Yes, yes.
Can it be that science is coming out of this reason only?
Is coming out of this reason?
This
yes, science. What we think of as science, which just means knowledge, actually. What we think of as science, it's a scientific method. It's a way of using our lens and our measuring rod and our probe to investigate the world around us and give explanations for the why it's the way it is.
Only a small part.
A very small part, yes.
And which constantly changes.
And of course, ideally, it is an exploration, an ongoing exploration. But unfortunately, like with other myths in other religions, some of the things that they've worked out, then they say, this is scientific truth, this is how it is, and it can't possibly be any other way. You know? And it becomes really a dogma, and that is what is happening to science in our day, that some really enlightened scientists are going beyond that, but then they are termed heretics, and their careers are finished, you know, they can't, their publications are banned. This is not the real scientific spirit of inquiry. If we really follow the reason, and not only the reason tied to sense, which he's pointing out here, but the pure reason which Sri Aurobindo speaks about in The Life Divine, which can take us far beyond science. It can give us an insight into other much more complex and subtle possibilities.
Could dogma be synonym of theodicy or not?
I think the theodicy is just a particular scheme, what he says, her scheme lines. But it can become, in the hands of human beings, irrational. It can become a dogma.
I actually disagree with what you just said about science. I mean, I feel like since the Tao of Physics was written, maybe around the 1980, around that time, I feel like there's been a merging of science and spirituality. I feel like the scientific field is much more open to what it doesn't know and what it can't explain than it was in the 40s, 50s, you know, in the past.
Yeah, well, you're obviously much more up to date than I am. But what I'm going off is a recent TED talk of Rupert Sheldrake, where he has identified 10 dogmas of science, which if you happen to disagree with, your career is finished. That's the basis of my remark. It was a very, very interesting TED talk, yeah.
She leaves the word conceived, what she conceived. Yeah.
conceived, it suggests what you do in your mind. You create a concept. So she sees the world that is, with all its inexplicable complexity, and what reason does is makes a mental conception to explain that world. So then it can hang its maps on the wall and say things are like this and like that and the other. So it's
different from the precept, like we have concept.
Sorry?
Precept. There's another word.
A precept is a bit like a prescription, isn't it?
Related to concept.
There's percept, you know, perception. There's what we perceive. With our senses, we perceive things, and then when that data, it comes into the brain, and somehow we interpret it, and we end up with concepts. A precept is a prescription, it's a recommendation that you are given, and that becomes a kind of standard recipe. Perhaps we should stop there for today.
Thanks to Sherbindo.